Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 70, Lord Krishna's Daily Activities, text number 39. Jivasyaya samsarato vimokshanam.
Jivasyaya samsarato vimokshanam.
Na janato nata vahachari rataha. Avatarai Sai Sa Pradipakam Prajvalayatram Tvatam Maham Prabhadhe Jivashaya Samsarato Vimakshanam Najanato Natavahachari Ratha Avatarai Sai Sa Pradipakam Prajvalayatva Tam Maham Prabhadhe.
For the conditioned living being,
He, the Supreme Lord.
Samsarata,
the conditioned soul,
caught in the cycle of birth and death.
Vimokshanam,
liberation.
Na janataha,
not knowing.
Anatta,
unwanted things.
Vahat,
which brings.
Sariratha,
from the material body.
Ila,
for pastimes.
Avatarai,
by his appearances in this world.
Sva,
his own.
Yasaha,
fame.
Pradipakam,
the torch.
Prajvalayat,
made to blaze.
Tva,
you.
Tam,
that Lord.
Aham,
I.
Prapadhe,
approach for shelter.
Translation.
The living being, caught in the cycle of birth and death, does not know how he can be delivered from the material body, which brings him so much trouble. But you, the Supreme Lord, descend to this world in various personal forms, and by performing your pastimes, you illumine the soul's path with the blazing torch of your fame. Therefore, I surrender unto you. Purport. Srila Prabhupada writes, Narada said, in the bodily concept of knowledge, everyone is driven by material desires, and thus everyone develops new material bodies one after another in the cycle of birth and death. Being absorbed in such a concept of existence, one does not know how to get out of the encagement of the material body. Out of your causeless mercy, my Lord, you descend to exhibit your different transcendental pastimes, which are illuminating and full of glory. Therefore, I have no alternative but to offer my respectful obeisances unto you. My dear Lord, you are the Supreme Parabrahman, and your pastimes, as an ordinary human, are another tactical resource. Exactly like a play on the stage in which an actor plays parts different from his own identity. I'll just read the next verse. Goes with this. Atapya sravaye brahma naraloka vidambanam ragya paitri shasriyasya bhaktasya cha chikirishitam. Nonetheless, O Supreme Truth, playing the part of a human being, I shall tell you what your devotee Yudhisthira Maharaj, the son of your father's sister, intends to do. So, in this sequence of prayers by Narada Muni and his reply to Krishna's question, if we go back to Krishna's question in text number 35 and 36, Krishna said to Narada, "It is certain that today the three worlds have attained freedom from all fear, for that is the influence of such a great personality as you, who travel at will throughout all the worlds." Text 36, "There is nothing unknown to you within God's creation, therefore please tell us what the Pandavas intend to do." So this is Krishna's questions to Narada Muni, when Narada Muni suddenly appeared in the assembly house of Krishna in Dwarka, and they had just been discussing, they had just heard how the messenger from the 20,000 kings who had been captured by Jarasandha had been appealing for Krishna to deliver them, and at that point Narada Muni has appeared, and Krishna has asked him literally a two-part question. And literally, up to the text that we're doing now, Narada has, in fact, answered the first part of the question, and with text number 40, he begins to answer the second part of the question, which is, what do the Pandavas intend to do? And in verses 41 to 45, Narada Muni answers that second part of the question. So it's important to understand that sequence of events in order to understand today's verse in its proper context. So it's quite enlightening here what Narada Muni is actually saying. So if we can sum up some of the realizations that we've been fortunate to get from Ramaswami, and also from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has made some very nice comments, and Srila Prabhupada in his Krishna book has made some very nice comments. So if we sort of sum up some of those into a clear picture of what Narada Muni is actually replying to Krishna. So in the first part, Narada Muni, he is saying that it is certain that today the three worlds have attained freedom from all fear, for that is the influence of such a great personality as you, who travel all throughout the world, all throughout the world. So Krishna knew that in one sense it wouldn't be proper to ask a great saintly person like Narada Muni, you know, are you free from fear and anxiety? Because naturally, great sages like Narada Muni, that is the very nature of their existence, that they are on the transcendental position beyond you know, the material world. So Krishna is asking then, you know, is the world, are all the three worlds free from the influence of fear? So one take on this particular statement, question by Lord Krishna, is that because of Narada's very presence, that everything becomes free from fear. And in another part, Krishna is asking, is the world full of free from fear? that part of the question, is the world free from fear, is part of Krishna's question. In other words, for instance, a son may approach the father and ask him some particular question, and the son knows that whatever question he asks, the father will always answer with what is beneficial for the whole family. Right? So this is such, it goes without saying, even without asking. You know, if you ask the father a question, should I do this at this particular stage? The father will answer that question, which, you know, in a way that is beneficial for the son, and at the same time he will always consider what is beneficial for the whole family as well, even without asking. So that's sort of, you know, there in Krishna's question. So, and because Narada Muni, in the same way that a father is in a position, or a mother, they're always in a position, or the grandparents, to know, you know, they have a broad picture of the welfare of the family. You know, that maybe the children don't understand, you know, everything that's involved in the circumstances of the family, but the elders, they understand everything that's going on. In the same way, Narada Muni, he travels all throughout the universe, so he's in the perfect position to literally answer any question, and whatever question he will answer, he will always be able to answer that question with regards to what is beneficial for everyone concerned. So someone may ask him a question, he won't answer that question so that, you know, one king will benefit and the surrounding kingdoms will suffer. Narada Muni will always answer a question in such a way that everyone within all the three worlds will benefit. So therefore, you know, it is a fixed question by Krishna. So, and then Krishna asks also that there is nothing unknown to you within God's creation, therefore please tell us what the Pandavas intend to do. So, in one sense, Krishna, he is also acting like the leader of Dwarka as a king or a ruler. So, it is very important for him to, in one sense, he is acting like an ordinary person in this material world, perhaps a king who is looking after his kingdom. You please guide me so that everyone is benefited. At the same time, Krishna appears to be acting like an ordinary human being by merely asking these questions. Otherwise, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's understood that he knows everything. So why is he asking any of these questions to someone else, as if he doesn't know? But then he is asking this question that, you know, how are the Pandavas? So we must remember the context of this situation that, you know, here is the messenger of the king with 20,000 kings, their lives at stake, and Krishna is revealing what's on his mind. How are my cousins, the Pandavas, doing? So he's concerned with the welfare of his kingdom and the world, but at the same time, what's within his mind is, you know, the welfare of the Pandavas. So how are they doing? In the same way, you know, we quite often see that, you know, there may be a very catastrophic circumstances, and the first thing that people think is, you know, oh, my family. They don't think, oh, you know, I'll immediately go and rescue someone else's family. The first thing, no matter what happens, you know, no matter how dangerous, if there was some situation, the first thing they'll think is, you know, I must, you know, rescue my family. And then, if I can, I'll look after others. So Krishna, he is that same sort of human trait, is there, this attachment to the Pandavas. And, as it is known, Jarasandha, previously, the messenger of the kings had explained how, you know, Jarasandha is conquering so many different kingdoms, and as we understand, you know, he was gradually, you know, conquering those kingdoms leading up to around the Pandavas kingdom of Indraprastha. So Krishna understood that, okay, this is dangerous for the kings, this is dangerous for the whole world, but my first concern, you know, is how are the Pandavas, what do they intend to do? At the same time, Krishna has some long-term plans, and he knows, because he actually is God, that the Pandavas will be the key to solving all these problems. But in one sense, appears by these questions to Narada Muni, appears to be an ordinary human being with ordinary human emotions and human attachments and doubts and limitations in knowledge. So Narada Muni then begins to answer his questions in text. So the first two verses, what Narada Muni says is that first he says, I have seen many times the insurmountable power of your Maya, O mighty one, by which you bewilder even the creator of the universe, Brahman. O all-encompassing Lord, it does not surprise me that you disguise yourself by your own energies while moving among the created beings as a fire covers its own light with smoke. So here, Narada Muni is saying, you're acting like an ordinary human being, but I know, as Prabhupada points out in the purport, that you're acting. So, but then he says, in one sense, it's not surprising that you would put on this act, that you would put on this disguise, because let's have a look at your activities. You know, you bewilder all living beings, even up to Brahma, and hide yourself behind the material energy. Because, naturally, all living beings in this universe, they come here to forget Krishna. If you want to come to forget Krishna, you come to the material world. So, therefore, you know, Krishna has fulfilled the desires of the living entities, and he has helped them to forget Krishna by covering them over with this Maya. So they become completely immersed in some illusory world and completely forget the reality. So therefore, when Krishna comes, he comes in disguise. Because there are still many personalities who really want to forget him. Right? But at the same time, he is picking up all those spirit souls who dearly want to know Krishna, and even those just on the edge, and some he's pushing over the edge himself by his pastimes. But he is, you know, for those who want to know him as an ordinary being, then he is appearing as an ordinary being. Of course, Narada Muni points out that in the next verse he says, who can properly understand your purpose with your material energy? You expand and also withdraw this creation, which thus appears to have substantial existence. Obeisances to you, whose transcendental position is inconceivable. So in the next verse, Narada Muni explains that, you know, you have so many purposes to fulfill. You appear in this human form, cover over your real transcendental position, hide yourself behind the material energy, hide yourself behind the Brahman effulgence, and with that you perform so many tasks. For those who want to forget you, this is the perfect way for them. Even though you're personally present, still they can forget you. For those who want to remember you, acting as an ordinary human being, you demonstrate how we live perfectly in this world. So Krishna shows, you know, if we are married, how to, you know, execute married life according to religious principles. Krishna showed, you know, brahmachari life when he was a little brahmachari. You know, he shows, you know, all different, you know, how to rule as a king. So Krishna acts as an ordinary person in order to show. Even his asking questions of Narada Muni is showing that that's what a king should do. When a saintly person comes, you may be a royal king, but the example is that you immediately offer respects, and you question them for the welfare of all living beings. Don't just, you know, be miserly looking after your own family. Don't be miserly looking after even your own kingdom. You know, and never ever neglect the sages. So, you know, Krishna is hiding himself from those who want to forget him. He's setting a perfect example in every possible way for those who live in any situation in this world. And at the same time, his human-like activities are very, very sweet. You know, they're very, very enchanting. Krishna does things that he knows that we as humans think is funny. Or, you know, so like when he was a little baby, he would, you know, go into the neighbor's house and he would pass stool behind, you know, the door or something. You know, so, you know, that, it's funny. You know, so he's acting like an ordinary human being, but it's very sweet, you know, to us who are on that platform. So for many, many different reasons, Krishna is actually, you know, engages in this human type pastime. But as if he is an ordinary human being, but Narada is pointing out, and you're really expert at creating this illusion that you are an ordinary person. And he gives different examples here that, you know, you can, with your material energy, you expand and also withdraw this creation, which thus appears to have substantial existence. So Krishna, he is so expert that he makes a shadow appear to be reality. Right? In the same way that a magician, a very expert magician, you know, sometimes you see a magic trick and you say, oh, it's all done with mirrors. You know, that's like, when I was a child, whenever there was something done and I couldn't understand it, and I'd ask my father, how did he do that? And he'd say, oh, it's all done with mirrors. That was the standard answer. Oh. So, you know, of course, on his level, you know, on an analyst level, when you watch a magician, we can see, you know, how the mirrors are working and, you know, the veils and what have you. But for, you know, those who are a little inexperienced, a bit younger, immature, they think, oh, did you see what he did? You know, like he pulled a rabbit out of a hat. You know, he pulled a coin out of my ear. So, you know, Krishna is very, very expert at creating this illusion. So Narada Muni is praising him, you know, you're playing the part of an ordinary human being, and you're really good. You know, you have builded everyone all the way up to Brahma, but I know that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which he explains in today's verse. You know, here he's giving proof that Krishna is God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he says that the living being caught in the cycle of birth and death does not know how he can be delivered from the material body, which brings him so much trouble. But you, Supreme Lord, descend to this world in various personal forms. And by performing your pastimes, you illumine the soul's path with the blazing torch of your fame. Therefore, I surrender unto you. So here, Krishna is praising, Narada Muni is actually praising Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by way of distinguishing the lower position of the living entity to the very exalted position of Krishna. And in that way, the glories of Krishna become blatantly obvious. So if we look at the living entities, they're caught in the cycle of birth and death, and they have no idea how they can get out of that cycle of birth and death. So this is the difference between us and God. We're caught, we're in this material world, and we're in this material body, and we want to somehow, we know that this material body causes us so much trouble, but we have no real idea how to get out of that trouble. Whereas, if we compare that with Krishna in all these various incarnations, Krishna, in his activities, he liberates his pastimes, what to speak of his own transcendental position. One who you know, remembers, meditates upon, or takes instructions from the activities of Krishna's various avatars, they become completely liberated from the material concept of life. So his activities are very glorious, like the rising sun, and the living entities are like, you know, little sparks, you know, within the dark universe. So there is a huge difference. So this is a very important point, because literally most people cannot accept Krishna as God because of the main fact is that he appears in a human form. You know, which is unusual, because there are so many other things that Krishna does. But because he appears in a human form, they discount everything else. So therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Krishna specifically says that in the 11th verse of the 9th chapter, he says, Fools deride me when I descend in the human form, because they do not know my supreme dominion over all that be. So Krishna appears in a human form, and therefore they say he cannot be God. He appears just like one of us. But they discount everything else that Krishna does. So Krishna takes birth. They say, Krishna takes birth, we take birth. The same. But if you have a look at Krishna's birth, Krishna appears with four arms, with a helmet, jewellery, fully decorated, garland, you know, beautiful locks of hair, illuminating the darkness. Like that. How do we appear? what is our covering? Let's not say. We certainly don't appear decorated with jewelry. But Krishna takes birth, we take birth, it's all the same. We have desire, for the opposite sex. Krishna has desire for the opposite sex. We get married, Krishna gets married. But Krishna marries 16,108 wives and lives with each one in separate palaces. And each palace, is indescribable, the opulence. And all his wives are happy. Now that's a miracle. So, but they say, Krishna marries, we marry, He's lusty, we're lusty, what's the difference? He's just more lusty. He's married, he has more lust than us, so he needs to marry 16 girlfriends. And he has, girlfriends on the side. That's what they think. They think that Krishna grows, we grow. You see Krishna, he goes from, childhood, to youth. But they don't consider that when Krishna was, over 100 years old, standing on the battle of Kurukshetra, he appeared like this fresh youth of 15, 16. So Krishna grows, we grow, it's all the same. And they just totally neglected 100 years old. Who can look like a youth? Krishna travels, he travels in a chariot. We travel in cars. But where does Krishna's chariot go? Krishna's chariot took him to see Mahavishnu. And where does our chariot go? It takes us to work. To the factory down the road. And this. And Krishna shows fear. You see, this is the month of Damodar. Krishna, Mother Yashoda is chasing Krishna with a stick. You naughty little boy. She sees his yogurty footprints. She follows him. She knows where he's going. He's running, hiding, crying, mascara's dripping. Ah, Krishna is scared. We also have our fears. But they forget at the same age, even younger, so many demons he was able to kill. And although, he is this fearful little child, when Mother Yashoda puts him on her lap and looks in his mouth, there all the universes are there. Everything, including Krishna, with Mother Yashoda, and Krishna sitting on her. So, but for this one point, they say, the fool, you'd have to be a fool. You say, Krishna does all these things, but because he appears as a human, I cannot accept him as God. So it is foolish. There's no logic to it. There's no argument to it. With a little common sense, you would easily appreciate, if Krishna is doing all these transcendental activities, there must be some purpose why he is appearing as an ordinary human being. Which Krishna himself gives, states very, very clearly in the Bhagavad Gita that, there's no work for me to do. I'm not part of the Varnashram system. But if I don't perform my duty, then the whole world will go to ruination. Therefore, I'm acting. But don't think I'm part of, this material world or any, situation within this material world. So, again, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that those fools who deride Krishna because he appears in a human form, everything, all their hopes for fruit of activities, are defeated. Their hopes to gain knowledge are defeated, and their hopes for liberation are completely defeated. And they're attracted by all sorts of atheistic and demoniac philosophies and paths. And Krishna says in the, I think it's the 13th verse of the same chapter, that, but those who understand that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they're under the spiritual energy, they're under the protection of the spiritual energy, and they're always engaged in my devotional service with, you know, love and determination. And they're always chanting my glories, bowing down, offering obeisances like this. So those who understand that although Krishna appears in a human form, he is still the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore they're always engaged in his devotional service with determination, and others take to different paths, so many other paths. So the path of Krishna consciousness, Krishna says in the end of that chapter, the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in the last verse he says, you know, the path of Krishna consciousness, for those who have understand that although I'm appearing in a human form, still I am the Supreme Lord of all that be, therefore always think of me, don't think of anything else, understand that everything is actually in relationship with me. Always think of me because in my personal form, and understand that everything is in relationship with me, being coming from my various energies, and offer be devoted, be my devotee. So Krishna is saying, think of me, but don't think of me like Kamsa, an envious or antagonistic way. Think of me with love and devotion. And offer your obeisances with great respect, so there is loving devotion, but at the same time, keep in mind, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And worship me, in other words. So internally, we are always thinking of Krishna with great devotion, with great respect, and externally, we're worshipping Krishna with all our activities. We're always engaged in some type of devotional service to Krishna. So Krishna says, and then in the 5th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that, you know, for those who are situated in this Krishna consciousness, they're situated like a lotus leaf on the water. That even though they're in this material world, they're completely untouched by it. Srila Prabhupada, in commenting on that, he says that not even one drop can stick to the lotus. The very nature of the petals and the leaves is, when water touches a lotus flower, it immediately runs off. There's one saying by, that beauty in this world is like a drop of water tottering on the edge of a lotus petal, because it will fall at any moment, because nothing sticks to a lotus petal, especially water, it just runs off. So for the devotees situated in Krishna consciousness, that is their position. They're in the material world, but here Krishna has asked, are the living entities living in fear? And Narada Muni is saying that yes, I have seen some living entities in a fearful situation because they're very attached to everything. They're not Krishna conscious. They're thinking in terms of, this is mine, how can I hold on to it? How can I fulfill my material desires? What is trying to, always frustrate my material desires? So they're always in fear. But a devotee situated like a lotus leaf, fearless. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, his name is Abhay Charanaravinda. One who is fearless, being fully surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord. That is the example that Srila Prabhupada gave us. That is his very name. He is fearless, completely fearless. And you see the huge risks that Srila Prabhupada took at a very advanced age, because he was fearless. He understood that, whatever I am doing, there can be no loss, there can be no failure, because I'm not attached to anything in this world. How can there be loss? How can there be failure? How can there be disappointment? I don't have anything to do. I don't have anything that belongs to me. All I have is a desire to serve Krishna. And that is completely transcendental. If I go to the Western world and nothing happens, all I have done is serve Krishna and taking a big risk on his behalf. There is no loss. But if something happens, it will be wonderful. So, you know, a devotee is situated like that because they're not attached. They're like that lotus leaf. They're untouched by the material world because they do everything for Krishna. They understand, I'm doing for Krishna, so what happens as a result of my activities, that is fully Krishna's responsibility. And they're fully confident that Krishna is responsible, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for the results of those activities. So they have nothing to fear at that. So therefore, you know, that is the principle of Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada, he had Krishna, and he was able to offer service to Krishna on that platform. And another very significant thing about Srila Prabhupada's, especially you know his disappearance in Kartika, and one of the things that I was meditating upon was that, of course, in Kartika we always meditate upon Mother Yasoda, how she, by her love, she was able to bind Krishna. That Krishna became bound. You know, he was willing to be tied up by Mother Yasoda. No one can tie up God, but because she loved him so much, he was showing the whole world, I love Mother Yasoda so much, her devotion. She loves me so much, she treats me like her own child. I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But she loves me so much, she's always trying to, you know, do everything, you know, to look after me. And her love is so sweet and so uninterrupted and so pure and so intense that she has completely bound me, tied me up by the ropes of her love. So, in the same way, Srila Prabhupada, he also, you know, he was able to bind Krishna by his love. That, you know, he was willing to risk his life, he was willing to risk everything out of his love for Krishna, to fulfill the desires of Krishna. And therefore he has Krishna to give. So if we want Krishna, we have to actually approach Srila Prabhupada or his representative, because they have Krishna and they can give Krishna. So it's very significant that Srila Prabhupada's disappearance was during the Kartika mass, because you know, meditating upon, you know, how the devotee, you know, the example of Mother Yasoda, can bind Krishna and therefore give Krishna. Otherwise, without that love for Krishna, it is not possible to bind Krishna. It is not possible to capture Krishna. It is not possible to understand Krishna. And therefore the whole world, even up to the topmost demigods, are completely bewildered, and they can think that he's an ordinary person. They cannot even understand him, let alone, you know, offer some service. They're thinking, you know, even Lord Brahma at one stage became bewildered. You know, he just appears like a little boy having lunch with his, you know, I'll better test and see whether God is really there. So, but when that love is there, then Krishna fully manifests and everything is revealed, just as is described here, that he says that you illumine the soul's path with the blazing torch of your fame. So Krishna is like the sunshine, and everything is revealed. When the sun comes up, everything is revealed very nicely. So if we become attached, so some people may see us, you know, worshipping Srila Prabhupada, worshipping the spiritual master, and they may criticize, you know, why so much worship? But we understand the principle that they have Krishna. The pure devotees have Krishna, and if you can please the pure devotee, if you become attached to the pure devotees of the Lord, Krishna will very willingly also, you know, agree to be transferred. If the pure devotee is looking at you and thinking, I am so pleased with their service, they made this garland, they swept that floor, they you know, sold that book. If the pure devotee is looking at you and thinking, you know, I am pleased with that, I would love this person to become Krishna conscious, Krishna agrees to become yours. He agrees to be present so you can actually serve him at that. So if we become attached to the devotee and attached to serving the devotee, then this is our path to Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we have no way of access, understanding Krishna, what to speak of serving him. So actually, just an interesting story on how devotees, you know, become attached to Srila Prabhupada. One time Srila Prabhupada was in, I forget where he was in one of the temples, and Srila Prabhupada used to carry this old jar, and he used to, you know, get his tilak, and then he'd get a bit of water from that jar, mix it up, and he'd apply his tilak. And one of the devotees asked him, you know, Srila Prabhupada, why have you got this old water in this jar? You know, what is the significance? And Srila Prabhupada said, oh, that is Gandhi's water that I brought with me from India. And you know, the devotees understood. And then Srila Prabhupada said, here's a gift. So he gave them that jar of Gandhi's water. He said, you can put that on the altar. So the devotees said, well, okay, we'll get a nice silver container for the jar. And Prabhupada said, no, you can just put it on the altar like that. So they put this jar on the altar with the Ganges water. It was a Maxwell House coffee jar.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whenever someone would come to the temple, they would say, what's the spiritual significance of that Maxwell House, you know? And the devotees would say, well, that was a gift from Prabhupada. And they would understand, oh, okay, you know, like that. So that sort of attachment to Prabhupada is transcendental and glorious. And you can put it on the altar, and it will. You can worship that attachment, and it will take you back to Godhead. So, in this way, Narada Muni, he explains that Krishna, you are appearing like an ordinary human being, but by your activities, you know, in all your avatars, it is very clear to see that you are actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, in verse number 41, just to finish up, he says, nonetheless, O Supreme Truth, playing the part of a human being, I shall tell you what your devotee Yudhisthira Maharaj, the son of your father's sister, intends to do. And we will hear more about that in the coming verses. So if there's any questions or comments,
there are a couple of comments and questions. The first one is, I know with people with disabilities, mental problems.
Yes.
And I'd like to convince them about taking the Krishna consciousness while you're suffering in the over. They want to understand God, and it has been revealed in all the scriptures about God, Krishna. Mm. But they show resentment. They don't want to accept Krishna as a God.
Mm. What to do? Well, generally, as described, people come to the material world to forget Krishna. But we as devotees, we want to wake them up from that forgetfulness. But, you know, there is some that don't want to be woken up. So therefore, we have to preach Krishna consciousness according to time, place and circumstance. An example of that, Srila Prabhupada, one time he was he told a story how a Christian missionary, a Christian missionary was preaching to some miners, trying to convert them to accept Jesus and to take up Christianity. And so he was explaining, you know, he was giving this fire and brimstone sort of a talk, and explaining that you've got to send, you know, you've got to surrender to Jesus, otherwise you'll go to hell. So, you know, one of the first questions they asked, well, you know, what number is Jesus? You know, what's his number? Because their first thought was, you know, which mind does he work in? Is he in our mind? You know, where do we find him? What's his number? So, you know, the Christian missionary realised that he had to, you know, try and discuss on their level, you know. So he was talking about previously talking about going to hell, and he was saying, you know, it was a very dark and damp place. And of course, again, the miners were just looking at him blankly, you know, because they were looking around and think, well, it's not much different to where we are, really, you know. You know, we can't quite relate to what you're trying to say. Yeah, hey, don't you do that. So he was saying that you know, in hell there are no newspapers. So in this way, oh, you know, no newspapers, you know. It's funny, yesterday I walked out across the road, and I was putting something in my car, and someone a cleaner asked me if I had a newspaper. He did clean. I said, I don't read newspapers. I haven't read newspapers for like 30 years. I don't read newspapers. You know, it's like he was shocked. You know, he just sort of jaw dropped. So, you know, these miners. That, you know. And similarly, one time Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked Prabhupada, you know, what is, very early days, you know, what is Krishna like? What is the spiritual world like? And Srila Prabhupada answered, there is no draft board there. Right? You know, where they draft you into the army. Right? So that was similar. So in the same way, we have to approach people on a level that they can understand. Because, you know, Narada Muni and his followers, they can, you know, enter into the very, you know, deep confidential understanding of Krishna, his personality, his qualities, his name, his activities, everything like that. But generally, for most people, we have to come down to a very, very beginning level and somehow or another, just what you know that they can relate to, you present Krishna consciousness on that level. Because Krishna consciousness is appealing to everyone on every level. So we have to learn that art, not to just preach. A lot of times, devotees, when they're preaching, they preach to people of what they've been reading or what they've been thinking about. What my realizations are. That can be very anti, you know, productive. We can't, you know, I was reading some verse in the Bhagavad Gita, someone asked me about Krishna, I immediately start talking about that verse. It may not be the right verse. So we have to, you know, learn that art of, you know, looking at where they're on and present Krishna consciousness on that level. One time, you know, a devotee was, I think the devotee who was coming to Australia, Bhagavadan, and Srila Prabhupada said to him, you know, you take four pairs of cowtails and a, you know, madanga. And Prabhupada said, when I came to the Western world, I had, you know, I think one pair of cowtails, and then there were 50. And so Srila Prabhupada said, so in this way, you expand. You take four pair and you multiply by 50. So here's the devotee taking on this huge project, thinking, how am I going to spread Krishna consciousness in you? But Srila Prabhupada has brought it down to this simple level. You take, you know, four pair of cartels, and you just get, you know, double it by 50. You know, after some time, you've got 50 people playing cartels, you got a movement. So in that way, you know, whatever level people are on, if we can, you know, preach according to time, place and circumstance, then they will, they gradually will take it. And if we can't, if, you know, if nothing we say, you know, is helpful, don't say much, just give them prasada or some kid or a garland. If, you know, who can't relate to getting a nice beautiful flower garland, you give them a beautiful flower garland and they love you. And whatever you say, well, you know, I'll accept that as gospel truth.
And the other thing I just want to ask is sort of a comment.
Mm.
You said about fear.
Mm-hmm.
So don't we think, even after self-realization, one has the fear as long as they have a material body? Even if you don't have any fear, say if you're walking in the street, somebody might hurt you, or it's a possibility. So fear, don't you think even after realization, one should have a fear? Fear for breaking the laws of Krishna.
The spirit soul, in that same chapter we quoted about the lotus leaf sitting on the water untouched, Krishna specifically explains that point. Although we're in the body of nine holes, still the spirit soul does nothing because he's actually aloof from the body. It's the same as if we're sitting in a room. You know, for instance, you know, we don't identify with, you know, the building or so many things going on outside the building. You know, we're sitting here in this temple room and there's so much trouble in the world, but here we are, you know, playing with flowers and, you know, dancing around and taking bishava. We're in a room and, you know, we've made a nice situation. So we're sort of aloof within this room, this temple room. So the spirit soul is like that. You know, they're situated within the body, but you know, they're aloof from the body, like we are, you know, aloof from the world, sitting in this room. Even, you know, the super soul also, you know, sometimes people, you know, think because the super soul is in the body of a, you know, a pig or the body of a dog, therefore the super soul would be experiencing the you know, the terrible life of living in a pig. You know, whatever the horrible existence of a pig, that poor super soul has to experience that. But no, the super soul exists within, you know, the Svetit Vip, designed by Punta Loka. You know, wherever the super soul is, there is, you know, Vaikuntha Loka. He is experiencing Vaikuntha Loka situation within the body of a pig. He's being, so, you know, again, if we're situated nicely within the, you know, particular apartment, outside there may be, you know, blizzard, there may be, you know, very hot, maybe storms, but if we're comfortably situated within our room, then, you know, we're unaffected. So you can be in the middle of everything and be, you understand that? It's possible. Just in the same way that you can be in a room and there can be terrible circumstances outside, but you can be unaffected. Exactly the same, we can be situated within this body, but be totally unaffected by the room or externally what is happening to that. If we're Krishna conscious. But, you know, if we identify strongly with the body, we will then be, you know, strongly influenced and affected and fearful of everything that is influencing the body. So instead of being situated, you know, within the body in transcendental consciousness, we are totally absorbed in the body. As it says here, the living being caught in the cycle of birth and death does not know how he can be delivered from the material body, which brings him so much trouble. Prabhupada says here, being absorbed in such a concept of existence, one does not know how to get out of the engagement of the material body. So the fear comes from that total absorption in bodily consciousness that I am that body. That is the fear. Right? But when one is absorbed in Krishna consciousness, there is no fear. If the body is completely annihilated, then still the devotee, he doesn't feel that, you know, he understands that, you know, nothing will happen to the spirit soul. The spirit soul is eternal. The spirit soul cannot be annihilated. So where is the loss? Where is the possibility of danger? No one can cut the spirit soul, no one can hurt it, do anything to damage it, or, you know, anything. The spirit soul sits in its own glory eternally. So where can there be fear?
In one of the verses in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada mentions there are three forms of miseries.
Yeah.
One coming from the body, one coming from the mind, another one coming from other living beings.
Yeah.
So you may be doing the right thing all the time. That doesn't mean that other person is not going to hurt you. So the
problem,
that factor is always there.
They can only hurt you because you're identifying yourself as the body. No one can hurt the spirit soul, that's what I said. That's what the Bhagavad Gita says. That's what, if you're, you know, all those miseries pertain to the body, not the soul. When you understand, I am an eternal spiritual particle that cannot be influenced in any way by this material body, or anything within the material world, nor any demigod or anything. They cannot, you know, harm, affect, change the nature, disturb the spirit soul. It is eternally situated in its own glory.
So in other words, if you're walking in the street and somebody attacks you...
No, they're not attacking me, they're attacking the body. Yeah. So that's what you... Yeah, they cannot attack me. That's what, you know, Socrates said. When they captured... When they took Socrates and they said, we are going to try you, you know, for treason against the state, you have acted, because he didn't, and, you know, so they said, we'll give you hemlock and, you know, kill you. And he was thinking, well, first you'll have to capture me. You know, so far you have my body, how are you going to capture my spiritual soul? That's what he's thinking. So he was laughing at them. you're going to kill me. But that is the consciousness of someone who is situated in Krishna consciousness. So, you know, we cannot be situated in Krishna consciousness we cannot be situated in fixed that I am a spirit soul on that Brahman platform without Krishna consciousness. That's the problem. Therefore, we keep going back to this bodily conception of life. A devotee, they can remain fixed on the platform of Brahman because they have something to attach themselves to. Right? We cannot, if we try to give up this body, that's like trying to leave this room with nowhere else to go. I think, no, I'm going to stay here. I've got nowhere to go. So we keep coming back to the bodily concept. But for a devotee, they're attached to Krishna. You know, so they're very happy to leave this body, leave this room, because they have another place like that. Without that other attachment, without that other security, without that other situation, we just keep coming back with, you know, yoga, jnana, karma, all these different things will not allow us to confidently and permanently leave the bodily conception of life. We will keep coming back and keep being fearful. But if we're Krishna conscious, then we feel fully protected and fully attached to Krishna, and the devotee very easily remains on that Brahman platform. I am not this body. You know, you try and kill the body, you try and do this, you know, whatever like that, it does not affect me, you know. And I know that whatever happens, you know, Krishna will, you know, guide this little spirit soul that I am, and he will help me to a better destination. But we cannot maintain that consciousness without attachment to Krishna. And therefore, we will try, but we'll keep coming back to that bodily conception, and therefore we'll always be fearful.
What's the actual meaning of cause self mercy? I've come across it many times. I understand from little I know that there is no cause for Krishna, that he is unborn. So is that the connection? How would we interpret that phrase, cause self mercy?
Causeless mercy means that we haven't done anything to deserve it, and yet that mercy is given. So therefore I think it's the words of Shakespeare that mercy is not strained but descends like a gentle rain from heaven. So mercy means that, you know, it is coming unconditionally without any cause. You know, some people think that if you do your service to God, he must give you the results. So therefore, just be attached to the ritual. You don't literally have to pay too much attention to God. Just you know, be a good family person. You know, have a nice job. Do the right thing in this world. You're doing the right thing. God will have to give you his mercy. It's not a fact. Do you know what I mean? People think mercy is not dependent upon anything that we are doing. Even we're performing sadhana bhakti, we chant around, we worship the deities and what have you. Sadhana bhakti still does not automatically generate Krishna's mercy. Krishna's mercy is still independent. In other words, we may, bow down, every day in the temple, and we may chant our rounds, and we may do, so much, but that doesn't automatically, force Krishna that he must give us Krishna consciousness. Now, we must have Krishna prema. We have done, the rounds, we've done the obeisances. So therefore, you're obligated. It's not like that. Mercy means that when Krishna sees that his devotee is doing something, even imperfectly, but out of love, then Krishna agrees to bestow his compassion and benedictions upon that devotee by his mercy. Understand?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, that mercy generally flows through the pure devotees of the Lord. In other words, when a pure devotee, you know, casts his gaze upon you favorably, then Krishna, he thinks, oh, my pure devotee wants to be merciful to this person, I will be merciful. So therefore, you know, if you know, that's why we always approach Krishna through his devotees. And actually, really, we cannot invoke Krishna's mercy by trying to, you know, go any other way, jumping over the pure devotees, or, you know, just going straight to Krishna like that. And so it is very, very easy. So, you know, that's the wonderful thing about you know, taking shelter of ISKCON, taking shelter of Prabhupada, is that, you know, you can do the tiniest little service, but, you know, if it's done just, you know, as an offering of love to Srila Prabhupada, to his representative, no matter how simple or even defective that offering may be, you know, if the pure devotee, you know, just appreciates, oh, you know, thank you, you know, then Krishna, who is unattainable by great yogis, by demigods, automatically, you know, glances at you, smiles at the devotee, and you know, gives his cordial mercy. So easy to do. Any other questions or comments? All glory to the Prabhupada.